The Pat Kenny Show
with Matter Private Network
on News Talk.
My name is Mary Harney. I am the proud daughter of Margaret Peggy Harney. I was born in Bessborough in 1949. My mother and I stayed together in the mother and baby home for 2.5 years. When I was born, I apparently almost died, and I was put into what was known as the dying room. But my bawling and my crying and my gurgling apparently kept me going until the morning, and I was handed to my mother the next day. My mother chose to do some of the most menial tasks within the institution, like sluicing out the baby's nappies, so that she could sneak in to see me and pick me up, because women were not allowed free access to their children at any time of the day. I suffered whooping cough and measles while I was there, and therefore I was not eligible to be trafficked to America. Those were communicable diseases, and in getting children to America, they had to be free of such prior conditions, a bit like America today, really. My mother was given 30 minutes' notice to get me ready to have me taken from her. She and the other women used to knit for their children, and she had made me a little, I guess you could call it, a coat-type thing and a little bonnet. And when she got me dressed, she put me in those clothes. She walked me down to the nun who took me from her, and basically that was the last time my mother was ever supposed to see me. Within 30 minutes of being taken away from her, the nun came back and threw the little knitted clothes back at my mother and said, "She won't be needing those where she's going." Now, that is one of the personal testimonies I have found in a new book. It's a new collection of essays which tries to get some answers to the questions of redress, Ireland's institutions and transitional justice. It explores the way in which Ireland, North and South, treats those who suffered in the Magdalen laundries, in the mother and baby homes, in the county homes, industrial and reformatory schools, and Ireland's adoption system. Maeve O'Rourke is a lecturer in human rights in NUI Galway, is one of the editors of this project, and she joins me now. Maeve, good morning.
Morning, Pat. Thanks so much for having me.
I took that testimony from Mary Harney from the beginning of the book because it says everything we need to know, really, about those mother and baby homes and the kind of culture contained therein.
I think that's very true in one way. And I think it is absolutely the case that the general public in Ireland, whether through personal experience, family experience, or by listening to all the very brave, intelligent and just the survivors, the adopted people, the people we're so lucky to have speaking out, we all know what has happened in the institutions and the forced family separation system. But as Claire Wills, one of the contributors to this collection, says in her essay, it is not what we know, but how we know that matters. And what we're looking at in this collection of 24 essays is, what is justice? And why do those most directly affected keep telling us that they have not had justice yet? Is it enough for us to simply listen over and over again to what people are telling us? Or do we really have to interrogate what are they trying to tell us in terms of the outcomes today and for future generations they would like to see?
Now, you make the point that the records are there, and yet the state always takes a position of surprise when investigations unearth widespread abuse. Could it be that, you know, the records are there, but no one's looking at them?
Well, one of the problems is that anytime there has been a big investigation, whether it is the Commission to Inquire into Child Abuse that began in 1999, or the McAleese Committee that began in 2011, or the most recent Mother and Baby Homes Commission, these inquiries actually sequester the records that they gather and use, so that their verdict is the only one really that is allowed to be the official history. And those affected, and those of us in this collection, whether survivors, academics, journalists, historians, are not actually able to get to the records that the commissions have used. And so we have actually directly contradictory narratives coming from official inquiries oftentimes. And when you compare them with with what survivors are telling us, and no one's actually able to get to the records to show what the commissions have failed to apprehend. There has never been a human rights focus to what the commissions have done, and that actually is why we had findings, for example, from the Mother and Baby Homes Commission, that there's no evidence that women were forced into the institutions or forced to give up their child, that there's no evidence that the vaccine trials, even though they were unethical and unlawful, actually caused injury. And so actually, although records are there, they are unfortunately still kept secret. And that is one of the issues that pervades these essays from the testimony chapter at the very beginning, right to the very end, where Professor Jim Smith in Boston College looks at what the state has actually, you could say, always known in documents about CHU, for example.
But as I say, you know, the documents were there, and the information was knowable if anybody went looking for it. But the state didn't rummage into its own bottom drawer, if you like, to expose things.
Well, that's very true. We actually see an example in last week's apology in relation to illegal birth registrations, which many would call illegal adoptions. Because again, there is this sense of, oh my goodness, this is something we've only just found out, when of course it's not. But what the state has tried to do in order to limit the expense is to compartmentalize what, again, this book demonstrates, and we all actually know, to be an entirely connected system of institutions, adoption practices, boarding out practices, with individuals and families affected by many of these different institutions and practices over time, something they've told inquiry after inquiry and something the state has known. But we have this false notion, again, driven, I suppose, by cost cutting, that actually we're only finding out in bits, something that...
Isn't it odd, though, when you have a current minister, Roderick O'Gorman, who's making an apology for something that he personally had nothing whatsoever to do with? He is now the representative of the state and has no feeling for it. It reminds me of, you know, David Cameron apologising for Bloody Sunday on behalf of the state, but having no direct link to it, that we're asking today's politicians to kind of stand up and be counted for the sins of past politicians.
Well, what this book, I think, to most readers will clearly say at its most basic level is that this issue is so vast and so complex that the place we have to start is with truth-telling and opening records. And if the state was willing to do that, if the civil service would allow it, we would not have this strange situation of constant management with constant small compartmentalized apologies coming out every now and then for things as if they were individualized new revelations. So what needs to happen is opening up of records, allowing people to tell their truth. Don't forget that those who gave evidence to the residential institutions redress board are still actually criminally prohibited from stating what they told the redress board in a way that could identify an individual or institution involved in their abuse. So you will be able to tell from this, I think, amazing collection of essays from many vantage points, that the most basic place we have to start, and this is a tenet of transitional justice, is with full truth-telling. Two of our contributors, Mairead Enright and Sinead Ring, talk about the notion of shame that comes up so much in these apologies that we see one after another. And they state, true shame is an extraordinary, devastating ethical situation that you can't control. So if the state really wants to mean what it says when it says, you know, it's ashamed of its past, that means it can't continue to stage manage the truth-telling, and access has to be opened up and people have to be allowed to speak freely.
There's the other situation where Marion Reynolds was investigating the illegal adoptions and registrations. She was complaining about redactions which were made by the department, and the department furnish a list of redactions, and they are including these: removal of one reference to an individual whose identity is uncertain on legal advice. The next one, which is really extraordinary: removal of a reference to legal advice on legal advice. I mean, you couldn't make that up. And then, most important, anonymizing names of institutions to protect the anonymity of the adopted persons whose files were reviewed.
I mean, it says it all, really, doesn't it? The government is still clinging on to its own power, really. It's continuing to exert this over people. And really, it means that that abuse is not historic. So we now have a situation where, because they anonymized all of the institutions in Marion Reynolds' report, the only institution still that the minister is acknowledging it was involved in illegal registrations is St. Patrick's Guild, and the government is offering people a sum of 3,000 euro to help with the cost of DNA, but only if it's a situation where it's a St. Patrick's Guild record that shows an illegal registration took place, even though we know that Marion Reynolds, the independent, very experienced social worker from Northern Ireland, issued a report that showed that far beyond St. Patrick's Guild, there are many institutions that clearly show suspicious evidence of illegal birth registration. And as you rightly point out, the government, against her request, insisted on redacting the names of all those institutions. Yeah. And that cannot possibly be in the interests or in accordance with the rights of those who are actually affected.
Two final points. One is about Northern Ireland. Have they done it any better there?
We have a chapter in the book looking at survivors' experiences of the Heart Inquiry, which, similarly to In the Republic, began with the issue of children's residential institutions. And we see very similar complaints, very well based by survivors, about how adversarial it was, how they did not access their own files until they were being cross-examined on them by lawyers for the alleged wrongdoers. And so now there is an opportunity to correct this poor practice, which we've seen both north and south, because last year an independent Truth Recovery Design Panel, of which I was actually one member, was appointed by the Assembly to work, to work with victims and survivors of Magdalens, mother and baby homes, workhouses, and inevitably people spoke about the adoption system as a whole, to design the framework for an upcoming inquiry. So there's a lot to learn from, and I certainly personally was very struck by the knowledge of the survivors in the North. When they are seeing what has happened in the South. And of course, some of them are actually affected and have been through inquiries here too. And there really is a chance to do this better. And I think records is going to be at the centre of it. And of course, because there has been so much cross-border human rights violations, the Irish government is going to have to act differently if it wants to actually facilitate a proper investigation.
Mm. And the last question, Maeve, really is about what you call connected abuse. I mean, the people who ended up in a mother and baby home often faced further misfortune, whether in a Magdalen laundry, in an industrial school, but really their life chances were hugely affected by that early experience.
That's absolutely the case. And one of the reasons why people have felt let down by their experience of inquiries, and also because they know that when certain people, such as those who were boarded out or those who were forcibly or illegally adopted, are left out of inquiries, it doesn't feel right to them, because no one participates in these inquiries from really a self-interested point of view. Why would you want to relive that experience to people who are complete strangers if it wasn't for a great desire to improve the situation of people who are in state care, people who are discriminated against, children, women in the future? So the fact that the inquiries come out with a very stunted version of the actual truth as we all understand it, and then hide away all the records, is highly dissatisfying to people who've bared all in order that we might actually have a better future.
Well, the book is called Redress Ireland's Institutions and Transitional Justice. It's edited by Maeve O'Rourke, my guest, and Catherine O'Donnell and James M. Smith. It'll be published by Dublin, by University College Dublin. When will it be available, Maeve?
It'll be in bookshops on the 21st of May, and the list price is €25. And I really think that there's something in it for everybody who's interested in this issue.
Maeve O'Rourke, thank you very much for joining us on the programme.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Matter Private Network.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.